I think it's time for us to move on to item seven. Discussion recommendation on shoreline management plan and customer guide. Billy, Kent, and Mike.
Okay, we had a passive recommendations.
You want to see the recommendations of what we think that this is right now? When we come back on the 22nd, we'll have more clarity. In other words, I recommend that we go through what we say, here's what we think the guides and the impacts are going to be, and then that gives y'all better visibility into whether or not you think we're on course.
Yes, sir.
All right, please. Go.
If you would, Jennifer, bring up the slide about okay. These are pretty much where the groups that came up with John the recommendations that you see here, if you bring them forward. The first one is the one that's been most of the discussion today. Everything else is pretty much, we haven't talked a lot about this, no additional private on-off facilities, except those that are previously grandfathered.
Can you just define that word, grandfather?
Well, I wish you wouldn't ask me to do that, but basically when we looked at this, initially we had this written as no additional private on-water facilities in new development. Because we do have a few areas left, like for instance over in Gainesville where you have the elevators, and the board had made, a decision last year, a little bit longer ago, that the five or six that we had left there, that we would treat them all fairly the same with the others. And maybe, as Mike has said, a few more other private areas where people could put in docks, that we would allow them to do that based on what the neighbors have done in the past. But that's what we mean by this from a grandfather issue.
So it's new development.
So this really is intended for no additional on-water private facilities for new development.
Okay.
We really should say that because I've been confused about this because I know there's probably all of BRA's leases are probably not all leased at this point. Is that a correct statement?
Right.
Maybe in Hog Bend or some of the remote places. And if it's not leased, it has no on-water permit application in right now. So does that mean, say, somebody takes a BR lease at Hog Bend, hadn't had one there before, they're not going to get it off?
That will not be the intent of this, no.
Okay. I think it needs to be a little broader.
Good point. We can change it to say that to for new development.
Mr. Garcia has,
I think you have the word new, no additional new. So you can punctuate the, new.
Director, I see a concern, though, that just as Director Martin just said, people that live in these other areas, maybe on a PRA lease that have not done one, then they look at that as, well, that's new to me, so does that mean that? So in all due respect, I think probably the best thing would be just to say no additional private on-water facilities for new development.
Associated with new developments. Is that what
new
you're saying?
Developments, yeah.
You know. Okay. I just think you need to clarify that statement a little bit.
Okay. We'll do that. We can do that.
That's an easy fix.
Next slide. Most of these are really fairly basic. Just good things for the light that we saw. I don't think there's really anything that's necessarily controversial in any of this.
You might explain the last one, what that means.
This goes back in again, and Mike can talk this as well, goes back into, as we look at the entire lake and the vision that we want, via even the floating capacity study, is to preserve and look at additional shoreline buffers around the lake as we work that study and how we allow development, water access, and that to happen or not happen. Mike, do you want to add anything to that?
No, just that the FERC project area has been considered our quote-unquote buffer for many, many years. Sometimes that narrows down to as much as 25 foot, and that's not really a significant buffer to the extent that we can enhance that buffer from where people are parking their cars and living and creating sources of pollution from the water. It may be to our best advantage to do that.
We just want to talk a little bit about the impacts that we see from the study. Next slide. permitting. You missed something on it? Notice of future development through adherence to management department classifications as we're talking here. Thank you. Dry stack storage. Fundamentally changes water access on the lake from what we've seen in the past. The video creation protection of shoreline buffers, which helps water quality, is not a point out of it. And we do think that it enhances motor safety with some of the recommendations. Next slide. Any further discussion on those? Okay, Grand Grand area. Good slide. Again, same type of partnership within the workshops. Next slide. This program is kind of a team for the board here, I think, as much as anything on these recommendations, is address existing conflict, both traffic, economic development, and environmental concerns. And developers came up to me afterwards again from Granbury, very, very concerned about your decisions on canal development and how that moves up to the lake. If you noticed, three out of those four presentations, when you looked at that map on Granbury, just without any issue of water quality, the environment part of what a canal does, if it's stagnant up in there, just the building capacity itself, and those three areas of the four would tell you don't do any more type of development that would lead to additional on-water boat numbers in those areas. So just the boating capacity itself, recommendation itself to study, if you run those management department areas, you know, you basically would probably say, we're not going to allow any cut-throughs, any more canals in that area. But it's a big issue for the city and the mayor and others, the bottom of the lake from their standpoint.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Your second one there, restricted areas as appropriate. Appropriate to what? I mean, what's the very general term? I don't.
Yes, there's some areas on the lake that we need some additional restricted areas, and that was a result of the discussions of the decision cooperating partners. In this study, they said, yeah, you need to continue to look at those areas. So, and good examples are the areas underneath the bridges. They've been, they haven't been, no, I think technically they are no-wake zones, but we've never expanded out from there. People are running through those bridges real fast. And we need to do some diligence there to ensure water safety.
Do we need to identify?
We have identified them, but yes, sir.
Would you like them in there, Rudy?
No. Well, appropriate, according to something or other, you're going to use some criteria to establish them, and that's all. Okay. That's why I was asking the question.
We'll put them in.
But you just put as required, you know. Especially in the restricted areas as required.
Yeah.
And that way, you need it, if you don't, you don't.
And they change as developers come in and develop new things come up. So
that's why as required rather than map.
That's another good term on what we're trying to do. We'll change that as required. Any other questions on this one?
I
just have one question about the channel boom markers that's in for both lakes. You're already installing them on Granbury, is that correct?
We've identified some real hazardous areas that we've installed them on. We prioritize them from most hazardous to least hazardous, but they're all hazardous.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would be a continuation of that project.
Have you installed any of them on Possum Kingdom?
No, but we think it's important.
You think about areas that...
No, particularly up north, as you come down, it is a better safety initiative that is common to most other lakes, and we just have never had it.
And will they be lighted on both lakes?
Yes.
Oh, is it expensive to do?
I think our first phase one and phase two cost us, Mike, what was it?
Approximately $34,000.
So it's an investment.
Yes.
And that's for Granberry's cost 35?
That was for Granberry's. The first two phases are the first two sections for Granberry.
Do you have any estimates on how much it's going to cost for, say, Possum Kingdom and do the rest of what you're going to do at Granberry?
The rest of what we're going to do at Granberry is going to cost us approximately $13,000. And that's because of the area that it was going to be on. It was less than the initial phase. And I'm trying to think. Now, give us a figure for PJ.
Can't you talk about that one, but the exception there with the guy that's existing plan?
Sure, I can do that now. We felt this estimate. We also, in conjunction with the moratorium that has been established on the canal cutters at the lake, we've had about three, maybe four requests from individual deeded property owners that are like at the end of a canal, one of the canals where there's no space for them to put a dock in because of the docks on each side of them. So they've asked us to be able to cut back ends of their property just so they could kind of establish a dock area in within their property. And that we have taken a position because of the moratorium on cut through the canals for the lake developments to not allow that to happen. Our intent would be to stick with that for the time being anyway, unless the board feels differently on that and to not allow that. It does impact to a certain degree, as these individuals told us, resale value of their property and that if they don't have water access that way with a personal kind of dock area for them. We understand that. We did feel like we could come off from a moratorium and should allow that.
This is probably a silly question. Do we have any grandfathered canal agreements?
Not that I'm aware of. Okay.
That's the fact that they're better.
I think a lot of the canals that are up in Granberry right now, the older ones especially, are previous property managers.
They're
better. Kind of after the fact that the VRA was even told they'd done it.
I guess from a water issue, I find it hard to find something positive about having canals.
Can you say that a lot of Truman, I didn't hear
you. Let me try that again. From a water quality standpoint, I can't find anything that I can think of that's positive about having canals.
I think they're concerned about that. It's an economic return on investment of $7 million.
But priority of that lake is water.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah.
And so I think we need to remember what our priority is.
We need to. I agree. Has the city and county agreed to do the exploration of the shoreline buffers? Is that at your recommendation? But is that
they were representative at the meetings that we had, and they also voted on this as well, that they would look at working with us to do that.
We're concerned about Granberry and our capability to do it in the first place.
Yeah.
I mean, that's definitely one thing I heard when they talked about canal cuts, is that it's more money to the city and it's more money to the developer. But I didn't see any perks for the VRA.
Director Blum and board, if you ask the staff, we would probably feel the same way, not only from an environmental standpoint, but there's a huge administrative workload that gets picked up if you put canals in, and you've got 150 waterfront lots with docks on them and that too as well.
Like I said, I find it hard to find something good about it from our standpoint.
Yes, sir.
It's true, very true.
Okay, next slide. Impacts of the recommendations, certainly right there we talk about future development, certainly limits that. Next slide. First one's pretty basic as we discussed. And I know after the during the lunch break the push is going to come hard yet to try to make that happen. We do feel like again, there's a lot of positive things on the lake that are brought forth with the recommendations from the study.
Sure.
This is certainly true here. Yes, sir.
The no lake areas you put under the 377 bridge and the Pearl Street. Have you done any enforcement surveys on that, or has there been any enforcement? If so, how many violators have we had?
We had quite a few violators at the beginning of the National Bank.
I'm sorry, I thought you'd hear me. We've had quite a few violators, as you naturally think, in the very beginning because of the new people didn't know what was there. And we've written a lot of warnings to start out with, but as of today, haven't talked to them since this weekend, but as of last weekend, they had really come around. As far as I know, we've only had a couple complaints, and that's been it.
Any further discussion? Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're probably ready to move on to the next item on the agenda.
Thank you.
Item 8, discussion recommendations on Phase 3, Possum Kingdom Comprehensive Property Management Strategy for Possum Kingdom Lake. Kent from the Starback Company.
I think we have the shoreline management.
I'm sorry.
Again, what we'd like to do this time, Laura Lee and Mike and I, certainly along with the staff, have been involved with this with you. We want to go back again as we reviewed the shoreline management plan, customer guide, and the questions that we heard you say, and answer those if we could, and then take any other questions potentially as well. Slide, please. These are the things that we heard you ask us that you want to hear more about. And what I'll do is turn over this part of the briefing to Mike, who certainly be here to help him along with Laura Lee, starting with the grievance procedure there. That was a concern from the both from the staff, the board and the folks at that meeting.
When we last met and had this discussion, there was input from you, the board of directors, as well as a lot of input from the folks that sit on that side of the room. We're going to see a grievance procedure. We've included it. And let's go to the next slide. This is what we came up with. Informal conflict resolution is the first step in the big picture. Basically, that says, come on over and talk to us at the lake office. We'll try to work it out. We'll work out 95% of the issues on the lake this way. However, if that is insufficient for the customer, then the customer is authorized to go ahead and file a formal conflict resolution submitted first to the lake manager, who will fill it up general. We'll review it and make any addendums that are necessary for factual information and pass that up to the Upper Basin Manager. Upper Basin Manager is going to take a look at it, make his determination or cut on it. If the customer is still not pleased with it, then it will go to General Manager for final resolution. Next slide. You also asked us to come up with a cost estimate for code compliance in their inspections. To do this, we benchmarked, I think, about 16 North Texas or Texas communities and basically identified two alternatives. Number one is you can do in-house code compliance, which was the choice of many of the municipalities. They have their own internal code compliance inspectors. But for some of the smaller ones, they opted for contract services. In-house code compliance inspections in terms of costs, the inspection was included in the permit fee. The permit fee, in turn, was based on the valuation of the improvement. So it's a little bit hard to come up with a firm number to tell you what that number was, but that's how they did it. On the other side of the coin, from the contractual perspective, the contractor who does a lot of this type of work for several of the cities we post indicated that they generally do their inspections for about $50 an inspection. and that's just an individual inspection. We estimated, given the distance involved between where the source of contract labor is to Possum Kingdom, would probably bring that cost up somewhere between $50 and $100 per inspection. What that would equate to is, let's pretend you were going to build a house from the ground up. It would require somewhere between 10 and 11 inspections, and that would result in a cost to the customer, cost run through to the customer, of somewhere between $1,000 and $1,100, depending. I also want to mention that there is a separate construction fee established at Possum Kingdom for the purposes for our internal purposes, for our internal inspection processes as well. And the recommendation coming out of the Staubach report was that we increase that from $50 per inspection to $100. Next slide. I'll go into this just a little bit so you're very clear. I've got code compliance inspections over here. Now I'm talking about the BRA compliance inspections. Why do I have two different types of inspections? Because I have two different types of requirements. One is building standards requirement, and the other is to ensure that whatever is built on our property meets or exceeds our requirements in terms of encroachments and setbacks, septic requirements, survey requirements, the new transfer and term inspections as well. And the Staubach report recommends that we include an annual compliance inspection. Next slide. Presently, we are barely keeping our head above water in terms of transfer inspections only. There's an awful lot of other inspections that we should be doing that we just don't have the manpower to get done. In addition to that, additional requirements coming out of the Staubach report would significantly increase our responsibilities in terms of DRA compliance. With that in mind, we anticipate that there's going to be a requirement for additional DRA compliance inspectors. And the question that was asked at the last meeting was, what's this going to cost us? And we tried to identify it here. Basically, it's an initial cost of about $80,000 to bring a new employee on, with recurring costs of about $50,000 annually. That's salary and benefits. And that's an estimate of what we think is necessary.
So from that slide, you're talking about $240,000 of additional expenses to the BRA for three employees. You say there are two additional compliance inspectors and one BRA inspector?
All this is talking about is BRA compliance inspectors. This is not talking about code compliance. If you want us to do code compliance inspections, like I talked to on the previous slide, there would be a whole bunch more training that would be necessary for our inspectors to bring them up to that level. I'm confusing you, I can tell.
If you need two inspectors to do your BRA stuff and two more, then we're going to get into code compliance, and you can multiply that by three or four.
That's correct.
What is the recommendation, to do the code compliance or not?
The staff's recommendation is that we go with contract code compliance because it brings a lot of advantages for us given our size and our level of responsibilities. It puts that code thing in a professional engineering group's hands. It keeps us out of some liability. There's some good things for the Brazos River Authority, but I'll get involved in that.
Okay, so the additional fee for the code is going to be somewhere between $500 and $1,000 for a new home.
Correct.
Okay,
next slide. You asked us to please take a look and see if we couldn't come up with some additional clarification as to when a permit is required. And the specific request was to check with the city of Grand. Well, we did you one better. Next slide. We not only checked with the city of Grand, but we looked as far and wide as we could to determine how other cities and municipalities do this type of thing. What we discovered, quite honestly, was that the requirements that we established in the shoreline management plan were probably as detailed, if not more detailed, than what most other cities had. For instance, the city of Grand said call us up and we'll tell you. If you think you want to do something, you got to have a permit for anything, but call us up and we'll tell you if we really meant that. So our direction that was contained in the shoreline management plan had some specific exceptions for routine maintenance, which we thought played very well. It was very simple to understand. The other end of the spectrum was the city of Wichita Falls that had five pages of exceptions that we'd have to hire another whole team of lawyers to figure it out. So our staff's recommendation, having looked at this, was that what we've written in there is probably appropriate, easy to understand, and it's not going to answer all the questions, but we certainly have a staff there that's willing to help customers when they have questions.
What's in the guide right now, you're saying?
That's correct. Next slide. The next question was, will new developers be required to meet county road standards? The simple answer is yes, and most developers won't do it any other way anyway, because they're not interested in, most of them aren't interested in maintaining the roads once they build them, they want to turn them over to their customers, or to the counties. Next slide. In addition to those things you asked us about, through the course of digging around and looking around, we found a couple of areas, one of them administrative, that we felt we needed to correct. First one was there was a pre-existing structure provision inside our regulation. We quoted 1989. The actual date was May 15, 1980. And so we corrected that. And that's per our order amending license of our FERC license. The next one was regulations for governance of Brazos River Authority lakes and associated lands. Annex A to the plan, or to the guide that you have in front of you, is also our regulations, a copy of our regulations attached for easy reference. In there, we had deleted a requirement for all boats to maintain a no wake speed inside of 50 feet. We actually deleted that requirement because we thought state law had a provision for that. As it turns out, we made a mistake. The state law specifically referenced PWCs, personal watercraft. We wanted to extend that to all motor craft, so we reinstated this provision into our regulations.
If we do have the specific issues that he just talked about on separate pages to see how it looks in the guide, if the board would like to see that. If not, it's there. We'd like us to bring it up if we had to do that.
So this was changed. Originally it said just personal watercraft, and now it includes all watercraft?
Yeah, we originally had it in there. For years and years and years, we carried it for all watercraft to 100 feet. Well, that was 50 foot beyond what the state requirement was. We thought we could delete the whole item and just comply with state law. As it turns out, what the regulation, the state law is, only addressed personal watercraft, not all types of boats. And we wanted it to apply to all types of boats. Next slide. This brings us to staff recommendations. The recommendation from the staff is to adopt shoreline management plan and customer guide and regulations for governance of Brazos River Authority lakes with all proposed changes. We would anticipate that if it were approved by y'all, we would publish and we would distribute final volumes. And next slide. Having said all that, you've got the guide. We told you what our recommendations are. We thought it was important that we go through and expand on what we think the impacts are of the shoreline management guide. The first one is establish and communicate a set of lake rules for all to follow, and we think that's a very positive step forward. It's something that the lake has needed for years and years. And I'll let you read the rest of them.
One question, Mac.
Yes.
On the code issues, you've got two counties involved, maybe three.
Yes, sir.
Would you use the county codes, or what would you use?
Well, actually, the county, Palmetto County and Lynn County, neither one of them have any building codes that apply. What's going to apply is going to be the International Residential Code, for the most part, the Electrical Code, and some others that we've identified in there.
So, you're going to use the national standard?
Yes, sir. Next slide. And we'll open it to any discussion you might have, questions you might have.
I've got a question. Bottom line, dollars and cents, are we going to be, is it going to be a cash drain, or is it going to be a break even, or is it going to cover some of the administrative costs?
The code compliance inspections?
If we pass this with the code compliance, and you have to add, and I believe one person plus do contract, is this going to be a cash drain on us at all?
As far as the building code construction costs are concerned, I would say no, because that's going to be a direct flow through to the customer. In terms of adding an additional person or persons to our staff to get us above water on the BIA compliance inspections, that is an internal cost that we will have to absorb.
Okay, have you looked at that internal absorption versus the Staubach recommendation for increase in those on-water permit fees?
What he's saying, I think what he's saying is that it's a pass-through for the other thing, and because of our current workload and because of the projected workload, it's going to cost us more. We need to budget more to get it to go forward.
But I guess where I'm going is, Staubach has made recommendations to increase fees for boat docks and certain things. Do those fees cover the increased costs that we're going to be dealing with in regards to some of the FERC and water-related issues?
To be honest with you, we haven't bounced it against that other measure. What we bounced it against is they recommended a 100% increase in our construction permit fees. And we would anticipate that that would absorb a portion of it. I can't stand here and tell you what it would absorb at all.
Okay.
Well, okay.
If you look at their fee schedule, Mike, probably for instance, where they've made recommendations that there's no fees, for instance, like the watercraft recreational fee that right now is free to the lessees, I think the Staubach recommendation would say that they would pay like others for that. And Mike, that particular dollar amount right here is what right now with what we have provided free-wise.
We've given away about $67,000 worth of free stickers to folks. Now, that's a little misleading because that particular program, the revenues from that go into a different pot of money. It's a recreation fund that goes into, and that will not subsidize any of these inspections that we're talking about at all, that recreation fee. Yes, ma'am.
In regards to the BI compliance inspections, Staubach's recommending you do this every single year. Is that correct?
That was the recommendation that came out of the report.
For every lot and every boat dock. Do you think it's really necessary for all this to do this for every single lot and every boat dock every single year?
Well, it certainly gives us observation on our properties, which we don't have right now. As I mentioned, right now we try to keep up mostly with the complaint inspections and with the transfer inspections. So additional observation and diligence is necessary, whether it's annually or biannually. I think it's probably worth a discussion. Other lakes that FERC manages, a lot of them are turning to aerial photography. That's a very expensive proposition to do that. I mean, in terms of once a year, once every 2 years, I mean, that might be something we ought to discuss.
It just seems like a lot when you're talking 1,600 lots, and then I don't know how many additional docks that are on.
Well, it would require...
I'd
have to have some more personnel to do that.
Let me put this in a different perspective. Martha, let's say that you own 1,600 houses and you were renting them out. Do you think you would visit them at least once a year to see what they look like? That's your personal property that you're renting out? You are the landlord?
I'm just looking at it realistically. I think the BI has the resources to do it.
You personally own 1,600 rent houses. Would you visit them once a year?
I don't know. I don't own 1,600 rent houses.
Your property management, I'll ask you.
Well, to answer your question, yes, I would.
Okay, fair.
But let me throw something out. And we're talking about boat houses and on-water type facilities, correct?
And structures.
Absolutely. And structures.
Yes, sir.
You talking about going in people's houses?
No. No.
Okay.
We're basically what we do now on a transfer inspection. That is, go through, check the records to see if there's an encroachment on the property, see if there's been anything to the property that's encroaching into our FERC project area, which we're very concerned about. Take a look at the general character and condition of the property.
You know,
I might be able to see something where it's, you know, you pay an annual permit fee for a 2-year permit, and you divide the lake in half, and you inspect half 1 year and half the next year, try to cut down on some of your costs, or maybe, you know, maybe you even stretched out and inspect it once every 3 years. I think it'd be easier to do the on-water facilities once every 3 years versus the house. I understand the FERC compliance and encroachment issues.
Let me ask a question on that. Is there any reason why that inspection has to be done with BRA? If we're contracting a property management outfit, why couldn't they do the inspections for us?
Well, I think that could be in regards to the structures themselves.
And the FERC encroachment and everything, give them the rules.
Why do we
have to have the employee to do it? It could be part of the contract to the property management group. It could be the same people who do the code inspection, so they have two people trained for FERC. My question is, why does this have to be a BRA employee as long as it's done? Do you see my point?
Yeah, I see your point.
We have some very vested interests in this, and the communication between the inspector and the staff is really, really, really important. I'm not saying that it couldn't be done another way, but you know, we'll do what y'all want us to do.
Any questions on this point? Mike, I think you did a good job on this.
Great job.
I think you put a lot of work into it.
Staff all did an awful lot. And staff here did a tremendous amount. We spent a lot of sleepless nights and lousy dinners.
Even those are still trying to catch up on our sleep.
Mr. Chair, I think you're looking at probably over 100 hours of staff time to produce this. Multiplied by how many people that were doing. I mean, that's just,
Thank you.
If you want to discuss, Mr. Chairman, I think we're ready to move to the next item.